Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the injured voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
It's sadly true, Matthew. How are you?
I'm all right. An injury to your hands. It's been, 6 years since you retired from professional football, but the injuries keep coming.
They do, yeah. Game of golf, got quite a bad blister on the inside of my finger. It could be quite costly. I expect it to keep me out between 4 and 6 weeks.
What happened?
I have just literally got a blister on my finger. It was really annoying. Played the first round of golf for the year because, of course, golf course is open again now. And me being me, I made a very friendly wager with a colleague that I would hit a level par round this year. Now, to anyone listening in, I haven't broke 100 in probably 15 years. So I'm not particularly good at golf, but I thought, well, if you set a high goal, then the chances are you're going to improve that much more. So as the saying goes, aim for the moon and miss, you become one of the stars. So I thought, well, if I bet him that I'm going to hit a level par round, yes, I may lose a bet, may, not guaranteed, may lose the bet. But of course, in theory, the round that I'll shoot will be that much better had I just set a mediocre goal.
Firstly, aim for the moon and what you miss, you become one of the... That's one of the cheesiest lines I think you've delivered. I don't like that one. It's too cheesy.
Okay,
there's no substance to it.
Had it in my bedroom for years when I was a child. It was,
did you?
It means quite a lot to me.
But that's ambitious. That is ambitious.
Ambitious. And I was good when I was a kid. So I kind of feel that the structure is there. I've got a swing. I can play to a reasonable level. So I thought, well, I've got the base to build on. And I've been practicing a lot during the winter. So in my office at home, I do have golf net set up. I've got putting machines. So I've given it quite a lot of effort, but yeah, it is reasonably ambitious. And do you know what? After two holes, I was level par and starting to make noises that maybe today is going to be the day, but then quadruple bogey on the third, then put pay to that, unfortunately.
Okay, well, we've got plenty coming up over the course of the next 45 minutes or so. All the reaction from the Premier League and the EFL and some keeper capers we're going to chuck in too. But we've been quite busy, haven't we? Chatting away to goalkeepers again.
We have indeed. And hopefully some good ones lined up as well in the coming weeks.
Absolutely. I say goalkeepers. The first chat was with Dan Abrahams. That is now out there on Patreon. And we had a really good talk with him. Dan Abrahams, if you're not aware, is a sports psychologist helping people perform. I'm sure many who are interested in that field will be aware of who he is because he's very popular on the circuit, has worked with a lot of footballers, a lot of managers, and golf, which is where he started, of course, didn't he? And sports mindset is a big thing for him. He's got a series of books that you can find on his website, danabrahams.com. But it was a good chat, wasn't it?
It was. Now, he's somebody that, again, I've known for quite a long time now, very much been around the football world for many years. And what he's got and what he does, which is quite nice, is he will help you to understand things by breaking things down and making it quite simple. You know, one of the tough things about anything psychological is that you can go into an incredible depth and sometimes it can be a little bit too much. But what he's done and done very cleverly is he takes a lot of these ideas, finds the nuggets of information that are really important to players, and he's helped hundreds of players with his information.
It would be remiss of us, wouldn't it, not to provide a snippet at this juncture.
We do love a snippet.
And this is about feedback loops, because I put it to him that I think it's important to just know that he's not a miracle cure. In his own words, he said, you know, I'm not the antidote, but by heeding my advice, by following my methods, you give yourself the best chance of being the best possible goalkeeper that you can be. And that's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Look, I think we talk a lot about psychology on this show in particular. Look, my thoughts in regards to anything psychological, in the same way that you'd work any muscle in your body in order to try and improve, and any technique as a goalkeeper, arguably understanding your own mind is one of the biggest things that you can do as a goalkeeper to try and get yourself to the very top. You know, name a Premier League goalkeeper that psychologically isn't strong. You know, they've all got such incredible mindsets, and it is something that you can work on.
Okay, here is that aforementioned snippet.
I think every single feedback loop put in place needs to revolve around performance and mindset. Let's apply some intelligence here. When players walk out onto the pitch, let's strip this back. There is an outcome, there is a performance, there is a mindset. There is an outcome, a performance, and a mindset. We are so socialized in sport, in football, into outcome and performance. Outcome and performance, outcomes. Got to win. Got to perform. That we tend to ignore mindset. And obviously, we've spoken for the last 40 minutes about what that mindset and mindset framework can look like. But we've got to put feedback loops in place around both performance and mindset. I don't mind if a player comes off the pitch and says, Dan, you know, my performance was 6 out of 10 today. It was 7 out of 10. It was 5 out of 10. I also want feedback around mindset. Give me a mark out of 10 for your mindset. In that way, I can have a really good conversation with a player. If he or she says, well, my performance was down at 6 and my mindset was 7. Because then we can start to look at why so high, why as high as 7 for mindset? You know, what went well mindset-wise? What needs to go better next week with mindset? And we can relate that to the 6 out of 10 performance. Well, if you put in an 8 or 9 out of 10 for mindset, do you think that might have nudged it up a bit for performance? You know, might you have been a bit sharper, you know, a little bit better with your set positions, a bit better here, there and everywhere, and all the stuff you think about as a goalkeeper? It's probably the case you would do. But you've got to put in feedback loops around mindset and performance. I think that's absolutely crucial. The outcome's the outcome. That just takes care of itself. Well, that's a separate issue. But the main thing here is looking at, you know, having some feedback loops around mindset. And that doesn't really happen in the professional game. Very, very rarely have I ever seen a coach who really has a constructive conversation around mindset every week, the same feedback loops around mindset. I think I'm not 100% sure if I'm answering your question here, Matt, but I think you've got to put in both. I'm not for one minute suggesting that this is the antidote that gives you a perfect performance every single time. And of course, the onus is on the player. You know, let's have a good conversation. If we're going to sit down, we're going to start working on a game face, and we're going to talk about ants, and we're going to talk about other techniques. Of course, that player now has the techniques. That player now has to go and use those techniques. But to help that player use those techniques, we've got to put feedback loops in around those techniques. You know, we can't just ignore it from now on. For that part of the improvement process is having good conversations moving forward around how well they executed those techniques. And that's why it's got to be first going into a game. They've got to go out there and execute it during the game. And then after the game, we have good conversation around mark out a 10 for performance, mark out a 10 for mindset. Let's have a good conversation then. Then we have a better chance to improve it.
So that was Dan Abrahams there talking about feedback loops. It's a really good interview. So if you would like to listen to that, patreon.com/goalkeepersunion. And we've actually got a prize for our patrons as well, haven't we?
We do indeed this week.
So Dan was very kind to offer up a 1-year subscription to the Dan Abrahams Academy. Now, this comes in 3 formats: the player series, the coach series, and a parent series as well. You can choose which one you want to buy, but basically it's a series of videos and useful tips, which on the website says fun and informative animated videos bringing mental skills to life through bite-sized sessions, real life case studies, and motivating pep talks. So basically we are offering up one of those Academy subscriptions for our patrons.
Fantastic news.
So if you'd like to be involved, it's quite easy. Just head over to patreon.com/goalkeepersunion, sign up, and you will be in with a chance.
Fantastic.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Starting with the Premier League, as per Richard, Manchester City 1, Leeds United 2. Now, Ian Melier faced 29 shots in this game, 7 on target, 1 scored, a decent performance.
Very good. Yeah, very, very good. The save that I will point out in particular, I mean, look, there's so much more to his game than the saves that we're going to touch on, but the save in particular that I'll touch on is the one to his left, full stretch to his left. What I quite liked about this was it was one of them where you've got a choice. Do you parry? Do you catch? It was always going to be quite tough to catch, but the way in which he's gone for it, such soft hands, was able to keep it close to him and then get on the second ball. Very, very impressive. And there were a couple of times that he's made good saves close into him that slightly unorthodox. Once or twice when you wonder whether he might have turned the hands and kind of turned it into a collapse save because he had his hands just outside the line of the body, but still went with that technique. Very solid in that technique and held onto it each time, importantly. A couple of times in particular where you felt if he were to spill it, no doubt would have ended in a goal. So I just thought in big moments, pressure moments, he came up big.
There was a bit of talk after the game about a moment involving Raheem Sterling where he stamped on Meslier's hand after Meslier had parried the shot from Alexander Zinchenko, I think it was. Personally, I didn't think there was much in this. Some were suggesting that maybe Sterling should have been booked, even worse, sent off, because he was then involved in another challenge later on in the game, I think. But I didn't see too much in this.
No, to be honest, I didn't either. I mean, look, it's one of these situations where only Raheem Sterling will know what intent there was. My initial reaction was that he did go for the ball, and it's just one of those things.
Okay, early quiz.
Oh, go on.
An early quiz. Now, I was looking at this while I was watching the game because I thought that there was a chance Meslier might keep a clean sheet. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to do a bit of research here and just find out, since Pep Guardiola took charge at City in 2016-17, how many goalkeepers have kept a clean sheet at the Etihad in all competitions, right? The answer is six.
Okay.
Can you name them?
Well, I did get a sneak peek of your book before you hid it from me. Yeah, so I did see the first name, which was Dean Henderson.
Correct.
Okay, so I'll be honest, I didn't see anything after that. So look, I'm just going to go for some, what I consider obvious names. So I'm thinking that Liverpool have won there, so I'm going to go Alisson.
Incorrect.
Okay, so that was incorrect. I'm going to say Nick Pope.
Nick Pope. Burnley had a horrendous record against City,
true.
Don't they?
That is
Continued
true.
Like yeah. 22 in like four games or something.
That's true. I'm thinking more along the lines of which goalkeepers will have played a significant number of games at the Etihad. Do you know what? I'm not even going to... We could waste listeners' time here. We could waste a lot. Go on, hit me with the other five.
Okay, so it was Dean Henderson. I'm sure people are screaming at their headsets at the moment. So Dean Henderson is one. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I'm just going through them.
All right, fine.
Sorry, take credit for the one that you got right.
Which I cheated.
Rui Patricio.
Okay.
Yeah. Jonas Lersel.
Wow.
Lee Grant.
Yeah.
And David De Gea.
Okay.
He also got a clean sheet in the EFL Cup, David De Gea. So he's kept two clean sheets at the Etihad. And then one more was in the EFL Cup too. Also for Wolves.
John Ruddy?
Nope.
Ah, go on.
Who else could possibly have kept a clean sheet?
If not Patricio and John Ruddy, Will Norris?
Correct.
Wow.
Will Norris.
Well, there you go. God, it makes my clean sheet at the Etihad those years ago just seems so, so special.
Did you keep one there?
Oh, did I not mention that? I didn't mention that. No, live on Sky, 0-0 draw back in 2006, I believe. Yeah, big point it was for us. We got relegated at the end, so it wasn't a valuable point. But yeah, kept out the likes of Joey Barton, Micah Hyde and the rest. And I thought I deserved man of the match. I thought I was going to get man of the match. Not Micah Hyde. Micah Hyde played for us. Micah Richards. I thought I deserved man of the match, but I think the Sky commentators gave it to Danny Shittu from memory, which was must have been a tough decision.
Okay, so you mentioned the first name you came up with there, Joey Barton. I mean, okay. It's not the most...
it was just when City were very much... they were very much on the rise at that time. It was the start of what we're seeing now.
Here we go. Okay, we've got the lineups. Richard Lee and for Watford.
Not, just quickly, not that important as to what the Man City lineup is. I think more to the point is a clean sheet at the Etihad. In fact, it wasn't even called the Etihad back then, I don't think. I'm pretty sure it was a City of Manchester stadium.
Who was up front? Well, Georgios Samaras.
Yep.
Yeah, kept him out. Darius Vassell.
Oh, did he play?
Yeah. Yeah. Claudio Reyna was obviously a midfielder at the time. Ben Thatcher. Oh, did he come up for a corner and give you a bit? And then who's this? Let's have a look. Carradi. Bernardo Carradi. Mm. There you go. Remember him?
No.
Well, he played.
Okay. In goal was?
In goal was Nicky Weaver.
Yep, thought so.
Yeah, there you go. Thought so. Brilliant. Okay, well done you.
Thank you.
Kept a clean sheet at the Etihad.
Slipped that one in. But interestingly, going back to your list, so three United players.
Lee Grant was when he was at Stoke.
Ah, fair enough. Yep. Fair enough. Yeah, I suppose the main point to note is that we've got to be talking 150-odd games there. For only six clean sheets or whatever it looks like, six or seven clean sheets, it's phenomenal, really, from City.
Yeah, amazing. But they did not keep one against Leeds. Edison, can we quickly talk about the challenge that he made first and foremost, the tackle? Very good.
Very good. Yeah, it was well-timed. I mean, that's the kind of one that if it's not well-timed, then no doubt people are jumping all over it. Well, actually, interesting, I want to talk more about the goal conceded because... We spoke a lot about Edison when he comes out, spreads, does it incredibly well, makes a lot of saves that way. This was an interesting one for me in that we did speak about Edison, I believe it was last week, coming out making almost an identical save where he's come out of that far and made a save with his feet. But this one where it's interesting is a very different situation. If you look at the moment that Stuart Dallas actually strikes the shot, the pressure that he's under from the defender, you do just wonder whether Ederson may have been that little bit deeper. And it's so difficult. And this is where goalkeeping, I suppose the point being is that goalkeeping isn't black and white. You know, ordinarily you'd say a shot from here, Ederson, if it's one-on-one and there's no defenders around, he does what he does and he does it very well. And this would have been, you'd say, the correct decision for him, given his style of goalkeeping. Just given the fact that Stuart Dallas was under significant pressure, it does change the situation. Could he have had time just to drop a few more yards and turn it into a shot from the edge of the box under pressure with him being 2-3 yards off his line? Would he have had a better chance to have saved the ball?
Yeah, I suppose at point of impact as well, if you were to pause it when Stuart Dallas makes his strike, the covering defenders, John Stones being one of them, yeah, if he shoots from that distance with Ederson retreated, he's probably not going to score.
He's probably going to save it. But then this is where goalkeeping is so difficult, because this is all happening so quickly. And of course, Ederson doesn't know his shot's going to be under pressure a second earlier. As far as he's concerned, it's going to be a one-on-one, hence why he does what he does. And this is why it is second by second, millisecond by millisecond as a goalkeeper to make those quick decisions and decide, do you engage, do you retreat, do you stay? In this situation, Ederson decided to engage, and unfortunately, it didn't quite work out for him.
On to Crystal Palace and Chelsea. And sadly, it's time for this.
Commentary Corner.
Graeme Souness. This was on Sky Sports. This is quite a hefty commentary corner, so you're going to have to bear with me.
Okay.
It was at half time, and he laid in to Vicente Guaita, shall we say, which I didn't expect. I don't think anybody expected, but Souness was not happy with Guaita's performance. Okay, so he said for the goal from Kai Havertz, which he expertly curled round the defender and nestled into the net, Souness said, "I think the goalkeeper has one eye on Pulisic running in. I think the goalkeeper's got to do better there. That's going across the goalkeeper. But I think from this angle," and I think that was from behind the goal, "you'll see the goalkeeper, Guaita, sees Pulisic running in on him. He takes his eye off the ball. I think he's got to save that." And then it was the header from Kurt Zouma, I think, scored, didn't he? Now, he went on one here. He said, "For me, the goalkeeper's at fault again here. Great free kick from Mason Mount, not flighted in. Played with a bit of pace. If you go back and slow it down, you see the goalkeeper. First of all, he comes over to line up a non-existent wall. Look at them. They do eventually come together. Oh, let's come together. Let's hold hands. The ball comes in, he thinks about coming, the goalkeeper, and the ball is headed on the 6-yard box. Look, he thinks about coming, and then he goes back. And he's actually going back when the ball is headed, which," and this is the brilliant bit, "makes it super difficult for him to adjust his feet to get any spring into his toes."
Ah.
For me, I want the goalkeeper to come and collect that all day long.
Right. Thanks. Thanks, Graham. So, our league table of commentators, he's just climbed several places. He is right up there now. I mean, where do we start with this? Firstly, no, I'm not having it on either situation. The first one is a very, very good finish. I think positionally, he's fine. I think he gets a decent enough dive away and he just can't quite get there. Do keepers save this? I mean, look, there might be one or two, possibly, but certainly there cannot be an expectation to save this. And then in regards to the free kick, if anything, the blame for me goes more to the lads in the wall, you know, because he's there screaming, trying to get them together, and they're just not getting themselves into the position that they need to be, which then, when the referee does blow his whistle, he's having to readjust very quickly, and he ends up getting himself to a decent position for where the free kick is taken, but it's a great ball in, and it is headed pretty much on the 6-yard box. And again, it's one that, do goalkeepers come for this? You might see one or two. You know, we talk about the goalkeepers that are very proactive in terms of coming for crosses. Maybe a Robert Sanchez, etc., may come for this and get something on it, but I think most don't. I think the way in which the ball's arced in, there's not that much height on it. It is whipped in. It's a good ball. So I think he makes the right decision. Retreat to the line, set, and look to make the save. But it's an unstoppable header. It's as simple as that.
If you apply that logic as well that Souness gave about the header being on the 6-yard box to the consolation scored by Crystal Palace, you could say Christian Benteke was on the 6-yard box. Now, it was a slightly different delivery from Jeffrey Schlupp because it was out swinging away from Edouard Mendy. But if that's what Souness is saying, because he hasn't given any other reason there. He's just said, oh, he was on the 6-yard box. So what does that mean?
You're spot on. And that's the whole problem with goalkeeping analysis, and that it's not a one size fits all. Do you know, we've just described two Edison situations where he's done exactly the same in both situations, but just the fact that there's a defender there changes the whole situation. Therefore, we're giving it slightly different analysis. And that's the same point that we're making here, is that if you're beaten on your near post, there's a thousand different ways you can get beaten on your near post. You know, I think Guaita, in fairness, was beaten on his near post in this game, but there's absolutely no chance you're going to save it. So I think it is the same. You can't apply the same logic to every situation because it's not black and white. There's always grey areas, and that's exactly what it was here.
Okay, thank you to Chris Parker at Drayton Canary 1 for flagging that analysis from Souness there. On to Anfield, Liverpool 2, Aston Villa 1.
Just quickly, because I'm going to touch on it. He actually made some great saves, we need to say, Guaita. We haven't even touched on them. Made a couple of brilliant saves in particular. One down low to his right. Obviously one low to his left as well early on. And it's funny, really a game that I'm looking at that and giving him a 7 out of 10. No doubt on the back of Souness's analysis, he's probably getting a 4.
Okay, on to Anfield. Two good saves from Emi Martinez. Two chances, however, which ended up as goals.
Look, good goalkeeping as far as I'm concerned. And I know I feel like I say that with a lot of these situations. But naturally, when there's a save and the ball ends up in the net, you're going to ask the question, oh, could the goalkeeper have done differently? Look, ultimately, if he parries it back into play, he probably gets away with this. The one to his left in particular, you know, if he parries it straight back out, he probably gets away with it. But of course, he's doing what you've been taught to do, which he's gone full stretch to his left. Good parry into what ordinarily, probability wise, would be a safe area. It just so happens that Mo Salah's there and taps it in. So it is what it is. And certainly the save for the second goal, phenomenal save. And then of course the ball breaks and it's a great finish in the end. So nothing you can do there. But that's the life of a goalkeeper. At times you can do everything right and still get the wrong result.
The opener from Ollie Watkins for Aston Villa. Ian Longstaff tweeted us and said, we're having a bit of a dispute in the house over the Villa goal. Two think it was a goalkeeping error. I'm of the opinion that the ball is close to the body of Alisson, that it's a hard one for him, and that it comes at him from behind a player won't help.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one because this looks bad. It does look bad, and I think Alisson would have been frustrated by it because it's right in that channel where if it's ever so slightly closer to his feet, he saves it quite easily with his feet. If it's slightly further away, he saves it quite easily with his hand. But it's in that horrible little corridor where do you go hands, do you go feet? Now, look, hindsight's a lovely thing. I think he should have gone with his foot, and I think if he does that, he probably makes a save. He's tried to go with his hand. Look, more often than not on this show, we're talking about goalkeepers going with their feet when we say they should go with their hands, and it's probably the other way around here, you would say. So is it a goalkeeping error? It looks bad, and it will always look bad when it squirms through and it's in that horrible little corridor. But again, you guys that have played in goal or are playing in goal, you know how difficult those can be. And it's one that no doubt Alisson will feel he could have done better with, but certainly I don't think it is as bad as it looks. The only question marks I have is maybe in regards to position, because he is 5-6 yards. And in the end, if he's maybe a tiny bit deeper, of course, it gives him a little bit more reaction time. If he's slightly further forward, maybe he turns it into a block save, which wouldn't have been the right decision for this situation. So maybe it's a case of could he have just bought himself an extra couple of yards? That's the only question mark I've got. But no, in terms of the situation itself, as I say, I think Alisson will be disappointed, but it's not as bad an error as people have made out.
Burnley 1, Newcastle 2, and Bailey Peacock-Farrell in for Nick Pope. Very good save in the first half from Dwight Gayle, and Martin Dubravka 2 with some crucial saves, which proved crucial.
Yes, indeed. I thought Dubravka was fantastic. Watched this game live, and I thought it was an excellent save from Bailey Peacock-Farrell early on to his right-hand side. Very intelligent goalkeeping. Ball crossed in, could see that the striker was coming in, and put himself, by throwing himself to his right, in a position that gave him a great chance of making the save, which he did. Brilliant, brilliant save. No chance on the goals conceded, but I thought Dubravka was excellent. You know, aerially, the way in which Burnley piled balls in on him, and at times a little bit unorthodox, once or twice, you wonder, oh, could he have caught that? But every time he was getting it into a safe area or out for a corner or punching it away. So I've got no issue with that. The fact that he was as brave as he was to continually come over and over, I thought he was very good. And then a brilliant save to his left-hand side. And the fact that it was from one of his defenders, again, that can catch you out from time to time. But read it brilliantly as the ball came in. Ball skewed off his defender's foot, going right in the corner, and showed speed of feet and athleticism to get to his left-hand side and tip it wide.
Tottenham 1, Manchester United 3, and Dean Henderson back in after David De Gea played in the Europa League against Granada. Now, Before the game, when he was quizzed about David De Gea on Thursday, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said, yep, he's back in and you can expect to see him plenty more. At which point I thought, oh, he's making a big call here. De Gea's back in. But this is a massive call, isn't it? In a big game for United at Spurs to bring Henderson back in says a lot.
It does, yeah. And it's certainly from Dean Henderson's point of view, gradually been given chances over the season, and it's now becoming more and more frequent to the point now where this would state ordinarily that he is ahead of De Gea. I know that we could have said that now for a few weeks, but there is always that question mark when a goalkeeper's been out. You sometimes wonder, is it a case of someone keeping the gloves warm until there is maybe a defeat or a slight change, and at that point you change back to your standard one and two? But the fact that De Gea did as well as he did in Europe and that now he still made the change and put Dean Henderson back in, to me then says that at the moment Dean Henderson does certainly have the advantage. And in fairness to him, he did very well again. A couple of very good saves, one in particular with his foot, which I think you put a tweet out saying a little bit David De Gea-esque almost.
Well, it was the chat, wasn't it, after the game, especially on Twitter as well, is that everybody was saying, that's the type of save we've normally seen from David De Gea, and he did it twice from Heung-min Son and Harry Kane. So, listen, it's the save that you would expect him to make in that scenario, I suppose, although, like you say, Alisson didn't make that save from Ollie Watkins. So, yes, it's a David De Gea save, but I would imagine that that is something which might irk Dean Henderson, you know?
Maybe, but then at the same time, I think, and again, depending on what the relationship's like between them, of course, you learn from all the goalkeepers you work with. You know, I look at a lot of the techniques I adopted over the years. They would have been from goalkeepers I worked with when I was that bit younger. And even watching how Dean Henderson set the save with his foot, in particular from Son, I believe it was, to his right-hand side, the way in which he set, he was always primed to go with his feet. And you kind of felt that even if it had gone a little bit wider, he still would have gone with his feet because he kind of had that low set, slightly on the heels, but ready to use his feet as he needed to. In fact, even the goal, you know, he had the tendency to go with his feet as opposed to the hands. And actually, it does make sense. In those situations when it's that close in and you're trying to maybe cover a certain area and you haven't got the time to get down with your hands, you could argue that that makes much more sense in that situation. And Dean Henderson certainly looked very comfortable doing that.
We should also mention the incredible save from Hugo Lloris as well, down to his left from Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, fantastic. I thought that there was a couple of saves. The first being on the goal. And I think there was one or two questioned this, but for me, I thought this was a very, very good save on the goal. The speed reactions again, which is Hugo Lloris all over, and unfortunate that it was followed up and ended up in the back of the net. But no, the save, full stretch to his left, brilliant. Dipping shot, horrible to read, horrible to judge the bounce, and covered the ground very, very well, judged the bounce incredibly well. And this is all happening in a split second. And then to be able to get enough of a glove on it to get it around the post, superb.
Okay, just a couple more, and we're going to go to the Twitter sphere for these as well. Sheffield United 0, Arsenal 3. Neil Latham tweeted us in with regards to Steve McManaman's comments on the goal scored by Martinelli of Arsenal. He says, I'm not a goalkeeper, Steve McManaman, but Ramsdale palms that straight to Martinelli. Neil has asked, at full stretch, physically, how else would you expect him to stop the shot from going in? He palmed it out wide, not in front of him. Where was his defence?
I agree. And this is one of those tough ones which, again, if you are full stretch and there's not a lot of pace on the ball, which is quite important in this situation, because you can't generate a huge parry. You know, it's a bit of a cliche. Oh, big parry away from danger. It's a lot easier to do a big parry away from danger when there's a lot of pace on the ball, because you can just firm up your hand and you can get that kind of purchase on it and get it away from trouble. These are sometimes the hardest ones when it's effectively rolling quite slowly in the corner, but you can't get two hands on it. You can only get one hand on it. You need to get something on it. Otherwise, it is going to go in the corner. Then what else can you do? If you can't push it away and get that power, then ultimately you can just palm it using whatever pacer is on the ball into the best area you can. And I think in this situation, I don't think there's anything, unless Aaron Ramsdale can get more of a spring and hold it, I don't think there's anything else he can do. I think it's always going to be followed in by the attacking player. And as you say, and exactly as was said in the tweet, ideally this is where you need a bit of a helping hand from your defence.
And lastly, at Fulham on Friday night, bitter pill to swallow for the Cottagers. They lost 1-0 at home to Wolves. Right at the death, the goal from Adama Traore. Now, Alphonse Areola According to Glenn, Hoddle was beaten on his near post, which technically it kind of was. Hoddle said he was quite wide. If you're going to get beat as a keeper, it's got to be across your goal into the bottom corner. It can't go in that near post. So we tweeted this, and some of the responses we got were, Joe Gilbert says, great strike, but poor keeping, if you ask me. Mikhail Kuprianov says, disagree with Hoddle's reasoning, but I do feel like Areola was not in the optimal position to save that shot. Do you think the strike was just too well placed? Dave says, would Hoddle tolerate a goalkeeper commenting on a creative midfielder's performance? No. Let goalkeepers judge by goalkeepers, different breed. Jack Whelan, you'd imagine Alphonse Areola would be disappointed, but he's hit that so hard, I don't think anyone other than a pro goalkeeper could pass comment. Proper past you before you see it stuff. Christopher CK Black M says, he looks to be too deep. I probably would have been further out to cut the angle down a bit, but I think the conventional wisdom of the near post sometimes makes goalkeepers leave the far too wide open. Cover it, sure, but don't get crazy.
Yeah, great tweets. Really appreciate it, as always, and do keep them coming. It's probably the second tweet you read out in particular, which was
from Mikhail Kuprianov, which says, disagree with Hoddle's reasoning, but I do feel like Areola was not in the optimal position to save that shot. Do you think the strike was just too well placed? There's also one more I'm going to read out. This one is from at PG41, who says, come on, Hoddle is right. Areola is a top-class keeper. His reaction at the end says it all, straight down the tunnel. He will be thinking, I should save that. He's been quality for Fulham and a big reason they're in with a chance of staying up. He just got caught out.
Yeah, well, so that second tweet in particular, so that for me is exactly what I'd say. You know, look, you can question Glenn Hoddle's punditry and analysis of the goalkeeping, but when you actually pause it, when it's struck, if anything, look, we often criticise goalkeepers for over-covering the near. If anything, this is the opposite here, where he's over-covered the far, you could say. It's a very it's very unique. It's almost as if he's reading across. You know, you sometimes see this where a goalkeeper's thinking, this is coming across goal, I need to be ready. And the way in which he's gone for the strike, he's back on himself a bit, which is largely due to the power of the strike and the fact that he is ever so slightly out of position. It is past him before he's able to get his hand to it. And yeah, he'll hold his hands up. He'll know that this isn't great. But it has to be said, it is a phenomenal strike. It's moving all over the place. It's certainly not an easy one. But yeah, certainly one that Areola will hold his hands up to.
Okay, Richard, it is time. Yep, it's the Championship rundown. Norwich winning at Derby and Tim Krul with a left-hand save from Taden Mengi. Nearly caught out by Colin Kazim-Richards too in that game. They won the game, Norwich, but I do find those moments funny.
Well, when a goalkeeper shows a little bit of skill and then the running back sprinting back at pace towards the goal, is that what you mean?
So let me put something to you without offending both you and pretty much all of our listeners right now. Are goalkeepers lacking pace?
It's not lacking pace. It's that I think, because ordinarily, if you watch a goalkeeper sprint, they do look a little bit different to outfield players. And that's largely because...
Very different.
A little bit different to outfield players. And that's largely because goalkeepers don't sprint. You know, yeah, you sprint out to come... But even when you sprint out to come and spread, it's a five. You have to be quick off the mark. But then you're not actually ever really opening up. You never practice sprinting. So it is quite unusual to see a goalkeeper who has like a conventional sprinting style, I'd say.
A good save, though.
It was, yeah, no, great save to his left. And the one that you're touching on, he got caught out on the right-hand side and, yeah, sprinted back towards his goal. And thankfully, it led to nothing. But, look, Krul was excellent again. The save to his left. Look, huge credit to Norwich, it has to be said. Like, bouncing back as quickly as they've done, it's phenomenal. And Tim Krul's been a big part of that, you know, near enough and ever present, other than a slight injury that he had. And, of course, Daniel Bardon came in and did very, very well over those few games. But no, Krul excellent again. The save to his left in particular, impressive, very intelligent goalkeeping. Read it to an extent, so he'd taken up a good position. Almost started creeping ever so slightly to his left as he saw the striker line up, read the body shape. Good reading of the game, good spring. And this is one of those, in fact, we just spoke about Aaron Ramsdale not having the pace on the ball. This had loads of pace on the ball. So it was just a case of get that spring to your left. Big left hand. It's a massive parry away from danger.
Watford beating Reading and good hands from Daniel Backman to deny Sonny Aluko late in that game. And Rotherham and Huddersfield with a stalemate. Lewis Wing of Rotherham with a great strike met with an even greater save from Huddersfield's Ryan Schofield.
Yeah, very good. And certainly it has to be said, Schofield stepping back in, of course, missed the previous game in the 7-0 defeat. And look, Schofield's a big, big player for them. We know that. And this was a great save, as you mentioned. It's quite high to his left. And this is where I think, you know, people talk about height for a goalkeeper. What difference does it make? Schofield's a big man. He must be 6'5", I'm guessing, I'm assuming. And the way in which he used that height, used that reach that he's got to his left-hand side, I think this is the kind of shot that will beat a lot of goalkeepers, but certainly Schofield used all of his attributes here to get to it, and a good parry away.
Another goal direct from a corner in the game between Barnsley and Middlesbrough. Marcus Bettinelli caught out by Alex Mowat.
Yeah, horrible one. Horrible one. He's taken up a good position in the goal, but they just packed that six-yard box. And it's a brilliant ball in. And you can see from Bettinelli that he's tried to fight his way to the near post. And it is a fight because he's got men in front of him, tries to jink to his left to get to the near post, can't get to the ball. But you can see as soon as the ball's gone in, he's straight away gesticulating to his defence. Who's at the near post? Because ordinarily, surely that's got to be, whether they start at the near post or they start just outside, that has to be one where as the ball's whipped in, you retreat to that near post position and it can't be going in there. So I look, of course, when a ball goes directly in from a corner, you're going to look at the goalkeeper. But this is one of those where I just think positionally and organisationally, Middlesbrough just looked all over the place.
Joe Wildsmith falling foul of a deflection of a Stefan Johansson goal to put QPR 2-1 up in what was a 4-1 win over Sheffield Wednesday. What did you make of this one?
Again, I felt this was harsh. I saw that there was a post that went out, I think from Sky Sports Football, I think it was, on Twitter, that essentially said, huge blunder gives QPR the lead. And when I saw it, I thought, when you've got a deflection like that and you're moving to your right-hand side and the ball's headed back, it's a huge deflection. So, yeah, it's gone in quite close to him and naturally he's going to be a bit disappointed given that it is quite close to him, but it's a massive deflection. He's having to change his movement mid-flight. So I don't think it's an error, personally, and I know I tend to say that quite a lot. I'm very aware of that, but I think the reaction that I've seen in some places I thought was incredibly unfair.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, Alex Smithies back in for Cardiff and arguably at fault for the first Blackburn equaliser, courtesy of Adam Armstrong. That was moments before half-time. They conceded right at the death two from Armstrong. Bit of a disappointing result for Cardiff. Now, riddle me this, Richard. Dylan Phillips was replaced by Smithies, of course. He had replaced Smithies 13 games ago when Smithies went off with that mystery illness at the time. So 13 games Dylan Phillips has played. 12 goals conceded in that time. 5 came in that last outing at Sheffield Wednesday. Quite a freak result at Hillsborough. That's from an XGA of 17.54. He saved 2 penalties in the win over Preston at a crucial stage in that game. And on the day that he was dropped, he'd been nominated for the PFA Fans Player of the Month award. What's Mick McCarthy doing here? This was a strange decision.
Yeah, really strange. I think that, look, of course, Alex Smithies, and this is one of those situations where Alex Smithies would have been a bit disappointed to have been left out of the team after his illness. And how often do we say it? And then the two comes in and does very well. We spoke about Carl Darlow earlier in the season. At some point, quite often, you do see that the one comes back in, but it normally is on the back of a bad game or two. And I guess that's where this is a strange one, is that Dylan Phillips is yet to have that bad game. You mentioned the 5 goals, no chance on any of those goals in particular. And he has been a standout player. Their results have been fantastic when he's come in. And the problem that Mick McCarthy now has is that by Alex Smithies coming in, there's such huge pressure on him to then step back into that. And especially when you haven't played for a little while, to pick up the pace. As we've said so many times on this show, it could take 2 or 3 games. Well, there's only 6 games left of the season. So am I surprised that Alex Smithies had a tough afternoon? Not really. I felt a bit sorry for him that it's so difficult coming into a situation like that. And now what does Mick McCarthy do? You've got Dylan Phillips, who's arguably, according to, you know, the people voting, is the goalkeeper of the month and playing fantastically well. Do you bring him back in or do you stick with Alex Smithies? So he's certainly given himself a tough decision.
Best of the rest from the EFL.
Absolutely.
Birthday boy Ben Amos with 2 good saves from Charlie Wyke and Callum McFadden, and a big win for Charlton at Sunderland. He was unlucky as well with the consolation after making a double save in the lead-up with that spread. We love that spread.
We love a Ben Amos spread, and he was very, very good. What a result this was for Charlton. Obviously quite costly for Sunderland in their chase for automatic promotion, but yeah, very good. And the spread in particular where he somehow got his arm up, because he came out very good spread at the feet, but it's actually a very good finish where he lifted it over him, but where that arm came from, I don't know. Brilliant save from Ben Amos, one of many in the afternoon. And as you say, very unfortunate with the goal, which ended up being a header quite randomly from about 25 yards that beat him, but certainly nothing he could do. A couple of good saves in the build-up, and it's certainly given Charlton a good chance of a playoff spot.
Toby Savin with a dubious punch, you'd have to say, to gift Ollie Palmer an equaliser for AFC Wimbledon at Accrington. They then went on to win, didn't they, the Dons, quite convincingly.
Yeah, surprise result this one, given how Accrington have done this season. And Toby Savin, who's been very good in the last few weeks in particular, it has to be said. But yeah, a day that no doubt he'd want to forget. I think with this one, we spoke about Dubravka earlier and how good he was aerially all afternoon. And there was a few of these he dealt with where you're almost using one hand to protect yourself, your forearm to keep people at bay, and then punching with the other hand. And that was one of these situations where he's tried to create a little bit of space for himself, tried to keep himself protected, and then punch with the right hand, and he's effectively just mistimed the punch. So rather than it going out towards the edge of the box where he wanted it to go, it's effectively gone back on himself, and unfortunately luck wasn't with him, and it ended up in the back of the net.
No Gavin Bitzounu in nets for Rochdale again. Another defeat for them. Jay Lynch came in. Now, Brian Barry Murphy, last time out when he left Bitzounu out, said, listen, he's played a lot of games in a short space of time. He's been away on an international break with Ireland, so we're just going to give him a bit of a rest. But he's kept him out again.
Yeah, that's unusual. That being said, of course, Jay Lynch is a seasoned pro, it's fair to say. And certainly with the position that Rochdale find themselves in, it might just be a case that they want someone with that little bit more experience. You know, good examples you can see up and down the league. Lee Camp going into Swindon, where you feel that when you are in a relegation battle, perhaps it makes a little bit more sense to do that. I had a similar one myself when I was younger, and my first breakthrough season, I had a really good season, but it came to the crunch. And it actually happened because of an injury for me in particular, but it did make a lot of sense at that time to bring in Alec Chamberlain, who was 40-odd years old at the time, came in, really settled things down and saw out the last four or five games where we got the few points that we needed. And I do wonder, even if he's not necessarily saying it openly, that could explain why he's made the change.
Speaking of loans, Joe Bursic in at Peterborough, an emergency loan and a nice clean sheet on his debut.
Yeah, very good. Very, very good. Didn't have loads to do in this game. One decent save of note, but just very assured in everything that he did. And it's, yeah, very good news for Peterborough, really, because, of course, you're losing someone of the calibre of Christy Pym, who's been very, very solid, it's fair to say, for them this season. To be able to bring in someone like Joe Bursic for the run-in, I know that a lot of fans were very happy with it. I saw an interview, actually, from Lee Johnson in one of the papers, a Sunderland manager, just not overly happy that effectively the emergency loan coming in, you could argue, is of a very similar level to Christy Pym, you know. And I guess this is where, and it's a different subject, we've touched on it before, where I think the loan market or the goalkeeper market, the whole emergency loan, it is a little bit messed up. I would say that. And look, I'm saying this and I'm delighted for Joe Bursic, one of the lads that I do know very well. I'm delighted for him personally because it's a fantastic opportunity, and for him to top off a season of doing as well as he did at Doncaster, showing that he can handle it in the Championship at just 20 years old and now being involved in a promotion push, it's brilliant. But then I guess you think of it from a team's point of view in League One, where in some ways it makes sense just to carry one goalkeeper, because then you can utilise this emergency loan and get in somebody of the calibre of a Joe Bursic. I can understand why other teams are a little bit frustrated by that, because perhaps they've invested in having a permanent number two, spending money on their wages, etc., who you could argue wouldn't be of the calibre of Joe Bursic. So I can understand why a few people are a little bit upset, but the rules are what they are and Peterborough have made the most.
How do you feel if you are the Peterborough number two as well, by the way?
Yeah, well, that's it. There's a lot out there, unfortunately, a lot in League One and League Two, that providing they haven't played five league games, then an emergency loan is something that a club can do. So clubs purposefully have lads as a number two that haven't got the five league games, so they know they can exploit this little loophole. The problem is for goalkeeping on the whole is that, of course, if they're only carrying one goalkeeper, which quite a few do, and if you were to look in League One, League Two, you'll suddenly realise there's a lot that do this. Effectively, whoever your number two is, it kills them because they're not getting any games, and realistically, they're not enhancing their career, and you do wonder where their opportunity might come from. You know, another good example of this, who's doing brilliantly now, but he's had to wait his time, is Jack Stevens, who sat on the bench for Oxford for years. Now, finally, he's got his chance, and, you know, you've got all sorts of clubs that are linked with him in the Championship, etc. But he had to wait for years, and you had the likes of Jordan Archer loaned in. You had the likes of Connor Mitchell loaned in ahead of him. And this whole time, he wasn't able to get any games. The odd reserve game here and there, but he wasn't able to go on loan because he was number two. So I think it does kill the goalkeeping market to an extent. My worry on a slightly bigger scale is that goalkeepers that this summer that are out of contract, for instance, ordinarily a number two gig in League One would be a very good gig to get. That gig might not be there anymore.
The fake number two.
Indeed, it has been referred to as that.
Interesting. Really interesting stuff. On to League Two. Leighton Orient's Lawrence Vigouroux conceding a penalty with a rash challenge on Andy Williams of Cheltenham.
Yeah, frustrating one this for Lawrence Vigouroux. It's one that's just held up in the turf. We've all had it. Through ball, reasonably central, or reasonably straight, I would say, the through ball, out towards the corner of the box. He's ever so slightly misread it, I would say, in that you'd think it would just zip through that little bit more. If the turf was a tiny bit greasier, then he certainly gets to this. The fact that it holds up ever so slightly means that the attacking player can get there first, only just, and as soon as he gets his head to it and they collide, of course, it's always going to be a penalty.
Made a good save later on in the game, as did Josh Griffiths. Cheltenham won the game 1-0. It could have been drawn, but Connor Wilkinson's header was brilliantly tipped over.
Yeah, excellent save. And this is a huge result as well for Cheltenham, it has to be said, in their hunt for an automatic promotion. And for someone, Josh Griffiths, I think he's 19 now, I want to say, certainly 18, 19, a goalkeeper so young. He's had some incredible highs and a couple of lows, including, of course, a moment that we touched on not so long ago, getting beaten by a goal kick. But then to show and to have gone through the amount of things he's gone through this season, I've got nothing but credit for him. And he certainly won. I think we've said it before, but keep an eye out for him. He will be climbing the leagues very, very quickly. And this was an excellent save in this one. In the end, good enough for 3 points.
Also tipping over was Rory Watson. In at Scunthorpe, Mark Howard is currently out injured. He thwarted Paul Lewis of Tranmere. Good save.
Yeah, very good save. Slightly unorthodox in that he went with his right hand, but no, very, very good save. It was going right in the top corner. Managed to get up their fingertips. Very, very good.
And to finish, Mansfield 1, Newport 1. Nick Townsend denying Tyrese Sinclair in the first half, and Aidan Stone conceding from Josh Labadie. He'll be disappointed with that one.
Yeah, he will. It's one of those, again, and I say this far too often on this show as well, that we've all experienced this, where you go down to trap the ball to your right-hand side, in this case, as it was, and you go down with that technique, and if you don't quite time it, it just squirms through you, and of course, you know where it ends up, and it was simply that. And he had actually played really well up to this point, made a few very good saves, and affected the game on crosses, etc. But a moment like this, and especially when it means that you don't pick up the 3 points, will be a very difficult moment for him. But no doubt he'll bounce back, I'm sure. And Nick Townsend, as you mentioned, very good save with his feet, very sharp, and in the end, valuable. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, indeed. Well, look, we're coming out of lockdown, which means that the clubs will be open soon. And no doubt in the coming weeks, you will see Matthew Beadle in one of those clubs throwing the legendary shapes that he does. However, Matthew, as much as he will be in many a club in the coming weeks, he is not part of this club, because this is the club they all want to be part of. Of course, it is Clean Sheet Club. And here are this week's entrants. First, we start with Rui Patricio, one of just two in the Premier League this weekend. Bernd Leno, there's the other one, a first in 15 for Arsenal. Daniel Backman, back attack, 3 and 4. Freddie Woodman, should he, could he, would he? Yes, he should. Yes, he could. And yes, he did, for a first in 5. Brad Collins, first since 2 on the spin at the start of March. Neil Etheridge, finishing the season solidly, 3 from 3. Dan Bentley, first in 4. Brees Samba, 2 in 3. Tim Krul, back to backers. Ryan Schofield, 3 and 5. Victor Johansson, 3rd of 2021. David Raya, muy bien, muy limpio, dos tabos. Jack Stevens, 60 stuff with 6 scored and a first shutout in 6. Alex Cairns, even 60er with 6 in 8. Jack Bonham, 2 in 3. Matthias Sarkic, same, same. Andrew Fisher, same, same, same. Thomas Holy, 3 goalless draws in the last 4 for Ipswich. Matt Ingram, 2 on the spin. Joe Bursic, back in action and clean as a whistle. Richard O'Donnell, second since returning to the fold last month. Josh Griffiths, 4 and 6. Scott Brown, 6 straight wins with 4 sparkling shutouts. Rory Watson, second in only his 9th league outing this term. Joe Murphy, first EFL blank since November 2019 for the much-travelled Murph. Mark Oxley, 3 and 6 after returning from injury. And Glenn Morris, ye old classic, 2 and 3.
Very good. Very good, Richard. Did well there.
Thank you. You're making it more difficult for me every week now.
Okay, let's go to the table, shall we?
Let's.
So the top five. And we have a new leader.
No.
We have a new leader.
Let me guess.
He's already been mentioned.
Griffiths?
Correct.
There you go.
With 19 clean sheets this season, Josh Griffiths in 38 games is the leader of the clean sheet club. Freddie Woodman is also there on 19 too, but in 39 games.
Well, there you go.
So one game less. In third, you have Lee Burge, 18 in 34. And then joint fourth, fifth, Edison and Tim Krull, both with 17 on 31.
Well, there you go.
Bringing up the rear, just in reserve, Vaclav Hladký also on 17, but in 39. And Lawrence Vigouroux has leapt into the race, 17 in 40.
Very good.
Bit of keeper capers to finish.
Indeed, yes.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
So we are indebted to Stephen Waite, who has tweeted us this one in. This, of course, was during our mini hiatus from Twitter. And we are back, Richard. We are back.
We do. You did some begging, some grovelling.
Wrist well and truly slapped.
Yep.
But we're here to stay, maybe, hopefully.
We hope.
So the tweet was about the Stade Marocain goalkeeper, Ayoub Boulbir. Pardon pronunciation if I've got that wrong. This is the Moroccan second division. And apparently Stade Marocain lost important points in the race for promotion thanks to what was some bizarre goalkeeping, apparently, from Boulbir. They were playing Riyadi Salmi, I believe. And this was quite funny, quite humorous. He didn't have the best day at the office.
Tough day for the lad. Yeah, look, the first one, let's try and find positives. He's read the game incredibly well. He's tried to be effective, proactive. He's come a good, 30 yards out to meet a long ball forward. And he's tried to volley it clear, which I quite like. I like the fact that he's playing on the front foot. Unfortunately, the execution wasn't quite as he'd intended, and he's managed to skew it off his right foot back into the goal. I mean, it's just one of those moments. It could happen to anyone. But there was then another moment, I think, soon after that. Bit of a comedy of errors from memory, which actually resulted in one of his teammates getting sent off as well. I mean, you're welcome to describe that.
Well, he's just come way out of his goal. He's been dispossessed. The attacker has then tried to float it into an empty net. The defender has done well to cover back. But in trying to clear what wasn't the hardest shot in the world, I'm going to put it down to the pitch in the Moroccan second division and that it's taken an awkward bounce and it's actually hit his arm and gone wide. The referee has then sent him off and awarded a penalty.
Which then sort of squirmed under him and went into the corner. Look, it's one of those days. We've all had them. I'm sure he's been superb for the rest of the season. I'll be honest, I'm not overly clued up on the Moroccan second division, but my guess is he's been fantastic for the rest of the season.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, as always.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast between the sticks. Keep us.